You're listening to in-depth coverage and analysis of the final weeks of the 2020 campaign on the COIN Podcast Network, your local election headquarters.
To take the seat of our new democracy, right here.
In a city known for its beer, its wine, its restaurants, its weed, and keeping itself weird, you can argue it is protest that makes Portland famous. Since the Occupy Portland movement in the fall of 2011, the protest culture here has made headlines around the world and shaped the tenures of three Portland mayors. Today, as the first incumbent to seek re-election in more than a decade takes on two challengers, noted political scientist Jim Moore joins us with a look at how protest shapes the race for Portland's mayor. I'm Ian Costello. It is Tuesday, September 22nd, and you are listening to the COIN Podcast Network coverage of the 2020 election.
I'm Jim Moore, and I'm a political analyst. I've been doing it in the Oregon area for almost 30 years, and I teach politics at Pacific University.
Jim, I started the Portland chapter of my news career kind of in the aftermath of the 2011 Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Portland protests while Sam Adams was mayor. But mayors of Portland have been dealing with protests a lot longer than just the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of my favorites was during the first Bush administration. The Bush people would actually come out to Portland for fundraisers and things like that fairly often. There was a group from Reed College that would protest. They called themselves the Reverse Peristalsis Movement. The students would ingest red, white, and blue mashed potatoes and then throw up on the ground in front of the associated Republicans coming in to have their meetings. We have a long history of it. Portland has a reputation for protest. It's changed in the past couple of years, especially with the right-wing protesters saying, oh, we can also use Portland as a platform. But we've played that role for a long, long time.
This idea of Portland and protest kind of going hand in hand, and I want to start with the Occupy Portland protest. How did Mayor Sam Adams react to what was going on downtown?
Well, he, like most Portland mayors since basically early 1980s, is a liberal Democrat. And so the issues that people protest about, whether that's Occupy Wall Street, whether that's Black Lives Matter Now, they tend to be issues that the liberal Democratic mayors favor. They want change. They want to see if we can move to a better place. But the protests themselves take on a life of their own. That's kind of the whole point. And at some point, the mayor has to say, I have to stand for law and order in this town. And that might be a personal decision. It can be political pressure. It can be media coverage, whatever it is. Sam Adams was in a situation where the eventual decision was to basically clear out the Occupy protesters in the middle of the night. So they had taken over a couple of blocks. You could go down there. It was a village. It was an amazing place. And then just the decision was made. A little bit of warning was given. And they just went through and in pure police power moved people out. And that's what happens with mayors as they're balancing these things. Not uncommon. The uncommon part, though, is when you get long-term protests like what we're doing right now or the Occupy movement itself, or even, quite frankly, in the months after Trump was first elected, there were nightly marches then as well. At what point do you step in and say enough is enough, or do you let it go because the ideas are still out there and still need to be discussed?
Jim, Adams orders the crackdown in November of 2011 after 40-some days of Occupy. And then the following summer, we find out that he has decided not to run for re-election. Obviously, there were a lot of factors in that decision, both personal and professional. But do you feel like dealing with Occupy that previous fall had any impact on his decision not to run again?
I think it did for two reasons. First of all, it puts him on record as being against kind of the liberal heart of Portland and what it might want to have happen. But secondly, the personal toll on making those decisions on the mayor himself is immense. And you get a number of people in a number of places. You see governors doing this. If you're in the executive somewhere where you just say, you know, I just can't be in that situation again. It was too much for me. And so I'm not going to run for reelection.
So by the time we get to the summer of 2012, we've got three new people who are looking to try and take on this task. Charlie Hales, Jefferson Smith, and Eileen Brady are campaigning to replace Adams as mayor. Jim, do you think that the lingering memory of the Occupy protests and the money subsequently spent on police overtime and repairing the damage protesters did to Chapman and Lounsdale squares had an effect on that mayoral race?
I think it had an effect, but it was probably in the background. There was just a general sense that the city needed to move on from Sam Adams. Sam was known as a bit of a hothead, and he kind of calmed down in the mayor's seat, but there were some heads that were butting there. So there was really a sense that Occupy and its response was contributing to, we need to move on beyond. But with the three candidates you just mentioned, you know, the Occupy reaction was not really a part of the campaigns. It wasn't a central part of what they were talking about or what they were being quizzed on when they were out running for office.
So we didn't have this situation in that summer and fall of 2012 of any of these three Portland mayoral candidates using Occupy as a backdrop and promising that they were going to react to future protests any differently than Sam Adams had.
No, it really wasn't part of the discussion. It was more who was qualified, insider, outsider experience. That kind of thing was the main conversation going on.
So Charlie Hales wins the election, takes office January of 2013, and despite making some promises and attempts to reform police practices, there are several protests, some violent, calling for more police accountability. Do you think his reaction to those protests marred his time in the mayor's office?
It did, but the big issue with Charlie Hales was, how was he going to use his insider experience to bring about the change that he wanted to bring about? And remember, for him, as for most mayors don't run to be the mayor because they want to head up the police bureau. They run for mayor because they want to make the city a better place. They want the neighborhoods to be stronger. They want more streetcars. There's all sorts of reasons, but police reform is not usually central to who they are. It's something they respond to when they get into the mayor's office. Dealing with the police, as we've seen in the past several months, is incredibly complex because it's not just the chief of police and who sits in that chair. And there's direct accountability into City Hall. It's the police union, which is not accountable to anybody except its own members. And with Charlie Hales, I think he did not do a great job reaching out to not only the police chief side, but reaching out to the union side. And the union side began to grow in power and become a pretty major player beginning in that time. And certainly we see it now.
Mid to late summer of 2016, we find out that for the second straight Portland mayoral election, the incumbent, in this case, it's Charlie Hales, isn't running for reelection. But there's these scattered protests continuing. And by October, Don't Shoot PDX protesters are outside Charlie Hales' house. And everything kind of culminates with pretty aggressive violence after Donald Trump is elected president. Do you think it's fair to assume that at some point in time, Portland mayors just get sick and tired of dealing with protests?
I think it absolutely does. As we talked about a bit earlier, it takes away energy from things they would like to be doing. But, you know, it's been going on for long enough that as mayor, you basically should be prepared for it.
Does the structure of Portland city government handcuff the mayor when it comes to dealing with ongoing protests, especially once they turn violent and end with property damage? Is the mayor of Portland in an unattainable position?
I don't think it handcuffs them, but it certainly puts them in a much more responsible position than they'd be in almost any other city. And the reason is, with our commission form of government, we elect politicians to sit on the city council, but then they are the actual paid managers of the bureaus of the city, regardless of whether they know anything about the water supply or parks or anything else. And it's the same thing with the police bureau. Think about the way the Portland Police Bureau works in terms of its leadership. I've always thought, since I've been around here for 30 years, the worst possible job in the state of Oregon is to be the Portland police chief. because you serve basically at the pleasure of whoever the police commissioner is. The vast majority of time, that's the mayor. And you are basically the head on the chopping block if there's a political problem. And with the police, the mayor is going to fire you. It's a tremendously political job. It's an awful job. The mayors are the political side, and they're not good at running the police. And so I think there's a collision there that is just ongoing. We haven't had mayors who have experience dealing with that kind of a bureaucracy, and especially the police force and its culture.
We'll be right back.
The COIN Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Executive producer Ian Costello here, coming to you from the Work From Home COIN Podcast Studios. When we started our podcasts back in February of 2019, we had no idea that we would end up here. Now, a year and a half later, tens of thousands of you are listening to hundreds of our podcasts, and we need to make some changes to grow even further. That's why, starting this week, you can find all of the COIN podcasts in one place. The brand new COIN Podcast Network. From Beaver Smack to Writer's Block. From your weather to our constant coverage of the coronavirus pandemic and the protests in Portland. It is all available in one place. So, to keep hearing the podcasts you already love and to discover more of our exclusive audio content, head to coin.com/podcasts or search COIN, that's K-O-I-N, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or Podbean. Thank you for listening.
Now we get to January of 2017. Ted Wheeler takes office and is immediately greeted by protest over Donald Trump's inauguration. We talked about those a little bit before. And there haven't been many months, frankly, since that there haven't been at least some sort of protests. Since this last spring, Black Lives Matter and police accountability protests have been constant and often violent. Jim, Ted Wheeler, unlike the two people who came before him, is running for re-election. How do you feel the protests of the last 3 or 4 months are affecting this race in 2020?
Well, I think there's kind of an early part of the protest and then a now part of the protest. Early on, I think Ted Wheeler actually did a pretty good job of reaching out and saying, we need to allow these to happen. And given that people in Portland seem to support the Black Lives Matter message, I think it was good for him. All Sarah Yannarone, his opponent, could do was basically go to the protest. But even at the height of the protest, there were only 10,000 people on the streets. And usually in a given night, it's a couple of hundred. So she, even with social media, wasn't getting known. He was the mayor. He was responding. People look at that and say, wow, I want to see that in a mayor. Then they keep going. And the idea of the mayor not having control really begins to develop. So a couple of polls have shown that only about a third of people in Portland now support Ted Wheeler and his response to the protests. He's paid a political price. Does that impact the election? We don't know, because we don't know if those people know who Sarah Yannarone is and see her as having better ideas than Ted Wheeler, or just a continuation of what we've been seeing for the last decade.
We talked a little bit ago that the Occupy lead up to the 2012 election and the police accountability lead up to the 2016 mayoral election, those previous protests really didn't play a role in the mayoral election. And I know those had the advantages of time. Now that these are ongoing so close to the election and appear to be continuing to or through the election, Jim, do you see any indication that the last 4 months of protests are changing the way the two challengers, in this case, Sarah Yannarone and Teresa Rayford, are campaigning?
Yeah, I really do. Sergiana Rohn has basically turned her entire campaign to, I go out on the street with the protesters and I will have better ideas. She doesn't necessarily tell us what those ideas are. Carissa Rayford is running a write-in campaign, so she doesn't have really much of a chance of winning, but she could certainly take away votes somehow from one or the other of the candidates. And her entire political life is, there's police violence here, it's a racist violence, and we need to deal with it. So yeah, it does change the tone of the campaign. Another thing that changes the tone, though, is because of the coronavirus, campaigning is not normal now. It's mostly online, it's mostly remote. Because of that, we're not really hearing a campaign as we normally would for this race. We're not having people knocking on doors. We're not having people run radio ads. Most of it's happening in social media, which is its own echo chamber. What we're finding is, for instance, Sergiana Rohn, who has raised over $700,000, and yet when people are asked who she is, they don't know, because her campaign is basically focusing on the social media echo chamber rather than doing a traditional thing. So we're having a non-traditional campaign where the protests are a big deal, and that's not going to change. And so it's fundamentally probably going to be a referendum on Ted Wheeler's 4 years, but the referendum is going to be focused on, when you get your ballot in October, what has just happened in the protests and how has Ted Wheeler responded is going to guide how you vote. It's that important.
Election night is 6 weeks away. And Jim, I want to thank you very much for spending some time with me today. I'd like to wrap up with this kind of question or this thought. Does it matter who's in office? Are protests, sometimes violent, built into the DNA of Portland and therefore something every mayor will have to deal with at some point?
Yes, as long as we keep things the way they are now, every mayor will have to deal with these. Here's what has to change. First of all, the protests themselves have got to have strong and visible leadership. There has to be somebody who can carry a message from the streets into City Hall. Secondly, in City Hall, there has to be outreach to the protesters. And some of that has been going on, but not enough. Until that happens, the protests are going to be a way to raise issues, but not necessarily a way to solve issues. The protesters don't say, this is what we want, and negotiations go with the people in power. There's no solution except we're all just basically protesting and we're unhappy with the way things are. That kind of discussion needs to happen in Portland, where the protests go on and the frustration in the mayor's office goes on.
Bottom line, Jim, do the recent protests cost Ted Wheeler the mayor's office?
At this point, if I had to flip a coin, I'd bet you a dollar it does, but I'm not betting the mortgage.
Thank you very much, sir, for your time.
You're welcome.
That will do it for us today. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Coin Podcast Network. You can listen to more great Coin podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.